experience and how we can actually grow from these moments without undermining the suffering that some people have truly had during these times. And yes, I have the same problem. I will just shortly present our research background and how we actually ended up. We were doing research on well-being and trying to start a new research on well-being work in schools, but then it turned out into research on resilience or emergency or lockdown. So I will just shortly tell about lockdown in Finland, and then I will walk you through the studies that we've done during the past years, kind of a coincidence that we started to do this kind of work. And my goal is a kind of thinking the mindset, how can we go forward and what kind of mindset we need. Of course, I have a beautiful team working with me, and I actually, preparing this presentation, I went back 3 years when I started here, and I didn't know anybody here. And then I had my people who hired me, and I can see my supervisor here, who was so encouraging and supporting Anna-Maja Poikkeus, and that was a feeling that I'm really encouraged to do the visions that I want to do, and I'm doing that together with people who have skills and creativity. And this work has taught me also that it's never alone that we do things. And I remember that time of lockdown when I was home and very kind of devastated that things just don't go forward and I have to give up something and so on. And then when I met the team and then we started to talk, and somewhere the things just come up. Somehow things just go forward, and it's a collaborative effort. So I think everybody needs to, like, when we feel alone and that we cannot like progress, then just go with people and try to find people, and then you can be amazed the power of collaboration, power of how people can invent things together. So here are the people who I've been honored to work with, but also many others that I think that 3 years I've been here, it's amazing how many people you can actually know. I was so grateful this morning when I was going back to these years. So thank you for all the team. And one thing that I want to mention, that when I started as a postdoc here at the University of Jyväskylä, the mandate was to collaborate with two faculties. So we had to do, that was mandation, so we had to collaborate. And there was the Pilvi Hämeenaho, a postdoc from Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences, and I'm from psychology originally. I'm completely quantitative researcher, and she's completely qualitative and ethnograph background. And that has been also something that is important to know, that we have to struggle to understand each other, to find the way. And I've never read those research, what she's been reading, and she has difficulties in understanding my readings. And that kind of taught me that I need to be humble, to really try to understand the other person's point of view. And I have to go back, and I'm kind of feeling the stupidness that I just cannot understand things. And that's the place where we again start growing and a kind of finding new things in our collaboration with others. So I'm really thankful and grateful for this opportunity. I also, before I go to the topic, I want to thank for my students, masters. These are students, there are many others, but these presentations are found in our web pages. So all of my masters, these are students who have been working with this project, have done videos on our web pages. So you can go and see what they have done. Also learning from them. So I think there's a huge potential in young people and students at the moment. I can clearly see that. But now I go to the actual study, what we've done. So we started about 3 years ago. We wanted to do research on school well-being work. And our base was on communal student welfare, which is something that in Finland should be predominantly preventive. It's targeted to whole community, whole school community, and every and each adult is responsible of it, not only student welfare services, but every and each adult in the school. And we shifted it forward. We wanted to speak more about communal well-being work, not only student welfare work, because we think that also teachers and student assistant and all the personnel in the school are part of the community, and we also need to examine their well-being. And in order to support students, our school personnel needs to also be healthy and be well. So we did our first data collection. We were working hard to make this survey, and then we reached the school in Middle Finland. I was calling many principals and these municipalities, and then we reached quite many schools to respond to our first survey, which was in January, February 2020. And we were very positive because although the survey was very long, the respondents were writing that, yeah, this survey actually made me understand how important thing this well-being. It inspired myself to work in the community towards well-being. And so we were very happy. And with this data, we started to consider the whole school community well-being work and where we need the committed school community. We need the well-being personnel who is doing the work. So we want to also examine the school staff well-being, their collaboration and how they participate. But of course, there are practices that need to be done. So there needs to be something to do, so which the school personnel is realizing. So that's one wheel in a kind of the well-being factory that needs to be going on. We can have methods, we can have programs, we have pedagogy with our excellent teachers or the support from the student assistants and so on. And then we need a very, it was clear that we need a good leadership. We need something that kind of supports the whole process. And now we are calling it collaborative leadership because this is something that we need. Well-being work is collaborative effort. It's not something that one is doing, but it really needs the whole community. And these aspects are the ones that we wanted to study more detail. But it was just when we had finished the school report. I had just a few days ago sent them to all schools their own results, and then the school lockdown came. We had been contacting schools for interviews and collaborative workshops, but all we had to delay and plan it again. And now you can take the Menti square here if you have phones. So I'm not showing it yet, but I want you to just shortly think about your own time in 2020, in the spring 2020, in which situation you were at that point, what you were doing, and most importantly, what were the keys to cope? So there are three words that you can enter to the cloud and write your keys to cope. What were the things that make you manage during those 3 years? And I will come back to this cloud a bit later on this speak. Yeah, you can write them in English in the cloud. Yes. Three things. Okay. Now I go forward. So there's still some people taking the picture. Okay. But overall, yes, the national lockdown in Finland, it happened in mid-March 2020, 16th of March. All schools were closed. It was very sudden. In 1 week, and we had to kind of plan everything again. And all those schools were, I think the digitalization have been in the agenda for many years. But we could see that schools were not prepared. So we were certainly not prepared for such a lockdown and such enormous digitalization online education. And we could also see that students and also school personal home environments were transformed to working and studying. This is my kitchen table at that time. And really challenged for many people how they organize their lives. We had to reorganize everything again. And some people were very isolated. So there were a lot of worries as well. And there were worrying findings very soon when the lockdown started. We started to see the media discussions. And later on, we've seen a lot of studies. And this is one of meta-analyses that collected different studies on how what kind of effects the lockdown had on young people. And we could see that there is increased a lot of symptoms like depression, anxiety, loneliness, psychological stress, anger, irritability, and so on. So we can see that we need to be worried and we need to support these young adolescents and also some adults who suffered that time. But I think especially adolescents were in risk because of the developmental phase of importance of peer group at that time, and also with individuals with prior psychiatric problems or students with special education needs. And we could soon see that not all home environments are equal. So that's also something that we need to worry about. And that made our like realize how good our education is in Finland, because we can provide good education for everyone. When we look at the families, we have a lot of studies now that could see that families were also burdened during that time, especially those with children with special education needs. We could see soon that there was actually less help seeking from students to school health services, which was a kind of puzzling. We were at the same time very worried about the situation, but students were not seeking help from the school health services. We could see that the student health services deteriorated. They were not as good at that time. The multi-professional collaboration was not as well done as it used to be done. At the same time, there was increase in emergency calls. So actually there was more help needed, but somehow it didn't reach the people so well. And a small detail was that in many municipalities, teacher assistants were laid off. I come back to this idea later, but this was interesting and something that we need to think about. Also, we needed to cope with the situation. So as researchers, we also were working at home. This is my children. My first grader learned to read because I gave him more and more playing time with the phone. So if he is playing the Eka Play, the learning to read game. So he learned to read. It was a good thing, but of course, not always optimal. But we had to adapt to the situation, and then we transformed our research into lockdown research. But this presentation I wanted to frame in the resilience framework. So what is resilience? And I think Josephine was nicely talking about the piece, and I think there is something similar with this resilience idea. And the American Psychological Association and many other places define it as a process and the outcome of successfully adapting to difficult or challenging life experiences. So it's really something that happens during adversity. It's not only something that happens before the things are happening, but it's actually a process that it's constantly going on. So we can build it before, but it's actually building during the adversity. And then also after that. So it's constantly changing things. And so it's a process, and it's not only an individual aspect, it's about the interaction between individual and the surroundings. And what I like in this is from positive psychology, but it's not something completely optimistic. Like we heard also the idea of optimism from Marja-Leena that we shouldn't be too optimistic and not too pessimistic, but that we accept the situation as it is. We can fight, we can try to make it better, but at some point there are things that we just have to accept that things are as they are, and we try to go forward with this kind of this situation what we have. So I must say that I had colleagues who pushed me a bit and a kind of forced me to continue the research, and we applied a small funding and we got it. So then we had a second survey for the same personnel that were responding to the first survey just before lockdown. So we had the opportunity to have longitudinal data just before lockdown, and then the second measure was just after, and then we asked school personnel to evaluate their situation during the lockdown. And we wanted to have the whole school personnel, so not only teachers, but also special education teacher assistants, principals, and even the cleaning and food services personnel were included. They are in the other group in this bar. And we actually got respondents from many, many groups. So now we have had several studies already coming out from this time. And I was just saying, talking with Anna-Maja, because that the last paper that came out was this international paper, and it was sixth journal that we actually sent it, and a kind of putting it again and again and again. And I think this is also something that I was giving up. I was going to give up it already, but somehow my colleagues were supporting, and we managed to get it finally published. but they are all available now. And I will walk you through the main results of these studies. And the first thing what I we look at is the school personnel point of view, how students were doing coping during the COVID lockdown. And there are very small scripts, I hope you can see them, but we could in quantitative analysis look at the pre-lockdown situation, how they evaluated, how worried they were about students, and then during the lockdown, whether they were more worried about certain aspects. And we could see that before lockdown, there were some worries that overruled others. They were very worried about disruptive behavior and restlessness. These are externalizing behavior that are appearing in the school. So it's quite natural that, and they are big worries when we are in the school. But they were also very worried about excessive use of digital devices and also learning problems. So these were before lockdown. And then when we looked at that how they changed, that actually not, that there were some things that didn't change. They were still similarly worried, for instance, about parents' coping and well-being, students' life management, and school absences. I would have expected that they would be more worried about absences because students might have disappeared during the lockdown, but they were not. And then we saw that actually some worries increased. Learning problems increased. So this is, although the learning problems were a worry also before lockdown, but they still increased at the time. Loneliness, which is expected because we were isolated. So the worries about students' loneliness increased, and also tiredness. But quite many worries actually decreased. And there were more worries that decreased than increased. For instance, this excessive use of digital devices, although we were constantly on digital devices, the worry decreased because that was part of school work, that was part of our everyday life, but that was not worrying anymore. Quite naturally, also the externalizing behavior problems like restlessness, bullying, disrespectful behavior decreased because there was no chance to that kind of things when we are in our own computers. Which was a bit puzzling was that also mental health problems, worrying decreased because I was kind of expecting that we would be more worried about students' mental health problems. But we could see that in the open-ended responses, school personnel were worried about also mental health problems and the apathy of students, their depression or learning difficulties. So they were worried. But when we look at the before, after the quantitative data, it was not that striking. Of course, one explanation is that what is a bit worrying is that when students are not there, we don't see it. And that's why we are not worried. So we should be worried about a little bit of these findings that when teachers are not meeting the students, they don't also see the problems that they have. Okay. But shortly, that it was a kind of surprising how they described the students' well-being. So majority of responses in open-ended responses, they said that students, it suited well, this online education. So many students coped well with the online education, and some even bloomed. So they did even better. So they could see that there was a shy student who was actually flourishing during the lockdown time. And I think this is something that we need to see, that there were good things that we found during the lockdown. And this is something that we need to now carry on and utilize in the future. There were responses that considered that it didn't suit. So there were students who could not study during lockdown. And there was personnel who said that it was as before. Those who did well before do also well now. But then there were also surprises that they couldn't expect. They said that, okay, I was expecting that this student could not do well during lockdown, and that student was doing extremely well, or the other way around. So it's not something that we can predict beforehand. And I think we learned a lot from these things that teachers said that they learned about their students. And I want to highlight, because we want to think about the resilience, what we learn, highlight the positive things that they found. And for instance, many students felt that they had easier in concentrating at home. Some students grew independence and responsibility, that the students actually were more autonomous and they learned about themselves. And this was what something that teachers saw. They didn't have as many peer relation problems, bullying decreased. As one of my colleagues in Turku was saying, that this was one of the best anti-bullying programs that we had. That suddenly all bullying was decreased and also cyberbullying was decreasing. So it was not that we completely turned to internet, but it would have exploded. Some teachers said that they actually had better contact with students. So the interaction improved. They could get more close to the students. They started to understand better them. So this is also something that I think we need to carry over. And many said that collaboration with parents actually got better. So they started to understand better each other. And this is actually Pilvi Hämeenaho was doing some analysis with the data that we had with parents, working with parents. And she could see that there were a lot of explanations how it was so important that parents were collaborating. So that was the key to make the online education happen. This could not have happened without the collaboration and the efforts from parents. And they were typically very committed. And what I already said, that teachers and school person learned about families, but also the other way around, parents started to understand better what the schoolwork is, and they have better insights of what school is doing. So I think this collaboration is also something that we need to bring forward when we think about education in the future. I myself checked the quantitative data. We didn't have many questions about collaborating with parents, but one interesting finding was that we also asked about worries in difficulties in collaboration with parents. And interestingly, that decreased, the worry decreased. So actually they felt that the collaboration was not difficult during lockdown. And although, of course, the difference was small, but there is a good, it's good to ask that why this is so. Was it just a coincidence? Was it that that there was other more significant worries, so they were no longer worried about the collaboration? Or is it that when every party make a lot of effort, then the collaboration works? Or maybe there is something that the crisis makes people work together. Or perhaps they had more contact with the parents, and then when you actually have more contact, this kind of contact hypothesis from social psychology, that when you actually have the contact, it's a kind of makes the collaboration easier. You should just have to meet people and then it starts to work. We don't know. This was just a quantitative result. But I think overall, when we read through all the, we saw a lot of worrying things, but we also saw a lot of good things in the school personal descriptions of their students. And this positive views were not only biased views of teachers and school personnel, but also other studies have found that many students did well during that time. Many students felt that the distance learning was good. They could concentrate, bullying was decreased. And also for parents, although some saw the situation very difficult, there were a lot of parents who also grew close, more close to their children, and they learned a lot of positive things. So this is again, a kind of this optimistic view that what can we take from the difficult time? Yeah, but what about the school personnel's own well-being? So this is the next thing that we will go through now. So we were examining there just before lockdown and then just after lockdown when they were reflecting during the lockdown well-being. And then we were examining what kind of resources they had to cope with the situation. And we used the job demands and resources model. So we measured burnout, a work engagement, and a sense of belonging as the outcomes. We wanted to see how they changed before and after lockdown. And we had from burnout two different dimensions: exhaustion, which is more like I'm exhausted with the work. There's family. It's difficult to sleep because of the work is overwhelming. The second was cynicism, that they were actually really unmotivated. So it's a kind of deeper feeling of burnout, that you start to be so exhausted that you are unmotivated or you feel inadequacy in your work. And then work engagement, there was three items only. we couldn't use them as a one package, one measure. So we used work engagement as one, which was more like this enthusiasm about work, energy and enthusiasm. And then the absorption, which was as, like a, I'm immersed in my work. So that was another item. And then sense of belonging, we had three items to measure it. And then later I will show that how interpersonal work resources. So we wanted to know how collegial support, so the atmosphere climate in with the colleagues before lockdown, whether it could support during the lockdown and leadership support, whether they can get, they can support. And when we look at the results, we could see that, yes, it seemed that the lockdown was a demand that increased school personnel exhaustion. They were more exhausted. And this could be seen, and also work engagement decreased. So they were less a kind of enthusiastic about their work, and their sense of belonging in the work community decreased. So we can say that lockdown was a difficult time for school personnel as well. Although we couldn't see that cynicism would on average decrease, so they were not losing completely motivation in teaching. And the absorption item of work engagement actually increased. So they were more immersed in their work during lockdown. And exactly the same thing was seen in the open-ended responses. We could identify 49 expressions. This was the large amount who expressed exhaustion. So they were describing that this was a very difficult time. It was difficult to separate work from life when you work at home. And they explained how they were 24/7 trying to make things happen, and they were tired. And then we also, although the cynicism didn't increase statistically significantly, we could see that some personnel were really suffering. So they had too little resources. Some were very lonely. Some didn't get support from their school community. And like one person said that she could no longer be genuinely interested in students. So she was so tired that she could not do the work from heart. And I could see in their response that she was actually suffering from that feeling that I cannot dedicate myself anymore so well. The work engagement was more interesting. And I know that in here at Sanni Pöysä, for instance, with colleagues have done a nice study where they saw that work engagement might even be at a pretty high level during lockdown. And in our study, on average, it did decrease, but the open-ended responses gave a bit different story. And it seems that many people explained that this was a motivating experience, that they actually learned so many different things. And it was a kind of challenge, inspiring challenge for them. What explains the absorption dimension is that most at the same time felt that they were exhausted. So it was like this person says that it was burdensome yet tremendous experience. So there was some kind of contradictories. They were working a lot, but they were also achieving a lot, learning new things. So a kind of motivating experience. Quite not surprisingly, sense of belonging decreased. And that was mostly because they were missing work communities. And we could see from their responses that for teachers and school personnel, the school community is very important. So that they were not a kind of in negative mind on this, but they were missing people. And when we look at how the pre-lockdown respectful engagement within the work community and leadership support was related to well-being during that time, we could, of course, see that the longitudinal associations were not so strong, but especially the respectful engagement, that was even over and above the well-being at pre-lockdown influencing or related to the well-being in post-lockdown. I think it was the sense of belonging that it was related. So the work community climate before lockdown can be a resilience effect that can build your well-being, but it can also influence when you are isolated. So somehow it carries over to the next, to the lockdown period. So there were some effects from the interpersonal work relationship. But more interesting, I think, was the qualitative part of the study, because we didn't measure the work relationship during lockdown or leadership during lockdown, but we asked them to explain, and they were describing how so positively the collegial spirit, the teamwork, what they were doing with the schools. And this was, we had, I think, 40 or more responses who were actually kind of highlighting the how, not 49 responses that were really positive about the collegial atmosphere. And some were even describing that our team spirits even got better. And we started the teamwork, what we never have done before. So that was actually showing the community strength at that time. There were very few negative comments about the colleagues or the collegial atmosphere. And it was usually explained that people were tired, and there was, that's why, some negative communication. About leadership, that was a bit different story and very interesting story, as we could see that there were much more negative comments on leadership during lockdown than positive ones. Of course, this can be that the leaders are often the scapegoat of the situation, so that's easy to understand. But when reading the responses, we could see some ideas what would be the good leadership. And we could see that this kind of emotional support is very important. Understanding, listening, encouraging. I can see my supervisor at the time of lockdown, and I can feel that how important it was. But they felt that they need to have the leaders present and support and provide autonomy. And instead, the negative leadership comments were usually related to being very rigid or giving too strict guidelines how to do things, or they were absent. So I think this is a good thing to learn again, that what kind of leadership we need when we are facing difficult times. Yes, and I wanted to relate this study, although we framed it in the job demands and resources model, but I think it's also something about resilience and how we can recover. And this is from, I found, very nice study on resilience in time of global pandemics from Kunz. And she was a kind of framing it in this way, that it depend, it's about how we narrate the situation. Do we see it as a threat to our well-being? And then we can actually kind of see that we are going down, we are doing not so well. Or can we actually narrate it differently and narrate it as a learning opportunity? Accept that situation is difficult, accept the suffering. Of course, it was not easy, but still a kind of narrate it differently, that now we know what we do next. And then, of course, we need to think that we need to have enough resources to be able to manage. So no one is doing it alone. And this leads us to the third topic, which is about the school communities coping, adapting and transforming their practices. And this was Pilvi Hämeenaho's idea to set the comments, descriptions of school personnel in the resilience framework. And we can see that I already said that resilience is a process that is happening and it's all the time ongoing. And the first step, or one step, which can, it's not always linear process, but it's that we need to cope, we need to persist the first difficult times. And I think this is describing about the survival, and the school personnel were there describing the challenges that they were facing, the digital environments that they had to adjust to, the new kind of interaction that we have to face, and that the, all the role changes and worries that they had. Then we could see a kind of more optimistic descriptions, how they were saying that, yeah, we actually learned new things from our students. Wow, we did this digital leap. We managed. We could survive this period. We changed our way of thinking. And they also could recognize the home support, for instance. And then the last thing what we can do, that if we are really going to this, like from the resilience, we are not only recovering and adapting, but we are really transforming and doing something new things. And that's the third step, if we can utilize the difficult time for thriving and growth, and recognizing a kind of the things that, oh, this we can use in the future. If there is an emergency in the future, we are prepared. We know what to do. And we can use these things later on to support our students who, for instance, cannot come to school. So we can use the online tools now from now on. And I wanted to give you one example of this, how we could actually, the schools could refine their work and their roles. And we could see the more pessimistic descriptions, like the one here is that how one was really worried about student support and special education. It tracked behind. It should have been organized better from the very beginning. But clearly in this description, we can see that it didn't happen in that school. Or the other person, which I refer now, what I was saying previously, that some school assistants were laid off. And this, in this description, we can see that this teacher is saying that the work input of teacher assistants should have been directed to support part-time special education and not used for cleaning. So they were not really using the skills of those teacher assistants to really support the students. The opposite was found from other comments who were saying, this was saying, for instance, that every student was caught in the end. The remote assistants, which were etätsempparit, was the word that we saw many times in the descriptions, teacher, counselors, and special education teachers together did a great job. And this is something that we got interested in. What are these etätsempparit, these remote assistants, who were so much praised in the descriptions? And then we happened to know one school who explained us what they did. And this was a case interview, and I think very excellent way of how they redefined the roles and how they reorganized their work. And it was very simple. They decided in the first days of lockdown, they sat down with teacher assistants who were worried about their work because there were already these rumors going on that some people are laid off. They were also worried about the students who are not coming to online teaching. And so they sat down, they wrote down a kind of script that how can we do this better. They just divided them in teams, teacher assistant teams. Teacher was always giving a kind of list of students who need to be contacted, and the teacher assistants were then contacted them one by one, or they could have a homework settings online, or sometimes other things. And I think they had real rules, and then they also weekly met each other. So they got support from each other and shared the ideas how they can support the students. Very simple, but a kind of very effective. And I could hear when we were talking with these teacher assistants, they were saying that I felt that my work was really meaningful during the time. And that helped us to cope with the time. So I think it doesn't need to be something rocket science. It can be simple, but doing it together. And one hour, respondents described that much depended on what kind of solutions were used, organized, and managed remote school. Only creativity set the limits, and certainly many new ideas and models were born during this time. I, for instance, this picture is from my kids, but I heard about teacher who asked permission from principal to take children from home and take them to forest, and then she did the teaching in the forest. And a kind of like, these solutions are not so difficult to do, but we need the autonomy to do it, and we need we need to try out different things. What I want to, I'm soon closing, but I think that it's not really only the individual. I want to remind that when we speak about resilience, of course there are things that are within individual, but it's more about the supportive environment that we can provide. And that's building our resilience. And during the process, we build it more and more. So even though one can feel very sad and suffering at some point, if we reach out the support and take the support, then we can start flourishing and we can then recover and even go above the normal recovery. We can then thrive and succeed something even better. These are my favorite quotes from one paper about failure, that we know that learning is optimized when we fail 15% of time. And I think also this lockdown time showed us that we need to try out. Sometimes the things don't work in online education, sometimes they do. We need to try out, we need to fail in order to develop. Another saying is from, I'm also doing yoga and teaching yoga myself, is from Patty Joyce, who is a previous yoga teacher. And I'm constantly reminding myself this, that practice and all is coming. So it's not about a kind of driving something. I just do things and then things just start happening, and not a kind of dwelling in what could I do, what cannot I do, but just do. And then you practice. And then the Huberman Lab, who is doing podcasts on neurobiology. And I think he was referring to some studies that have found that there actually the plasticity in our brain opens up when we fail. So that's, again, encouraging us to make mistakes, try out mistake, and then do again. And then we actually start actually learning. So that's the way we learn. So we shouldn't be afraid of mistakes in order to go forward. I'm not going to show the video here, but I recommend you to go to YouTube and find this Hans Rosling. It's only 5 minutes video. He's a kind of explaining how countries in 200 years have developed. He had the lifespan in one line, and then he had the income in one line. And he's showing how the countries are in the left corner in the beginning and how they started to grow in 200 years. And then one spot is interesting when the World War came. Whoops, it down. And then we start to grow again. Even the poor countries, the most poor countries, they are going up and up. And I think this is very impressive figure that although we have had these big emergencies, big things in our world, we are still going forward. And I think that's the message that I want to close this presentation. Just some building blocks for making things better. And I want to thank all of you and my team from